Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. So on this podcast, that's what we get into, what it means to do that and make that happen. And I truly believe that ultimately the greatest factor in student voice and choice is teachers who are the designers of that learning experience. Now, lately, a lot of what we talk about has been, what does this mean to have a student voice and choice and ownership in virtual and hybrid classes? It's the topic that I got into on my latest book. If you want to check it out, check out Empowered at a Distance. You can find it on Amazon. And, you know, one of the strategies that I think can work really well is a student portfolio. So I'm going to start out by telling you the story of the very first time that I actually did a portfolio as a student. So when I was a senior in high school, our AP government teacher chose not to give us a final exam for the end of the first quarter. Now, I was stoked about it. I realize that people don't say stoked right now, but this was back in the late 90s, so it's totally fine to say stoked. I was stoked about it. I hated taking tests. I didn't love studying. I didn't like cramming. You get the idea. And this was different. Instead of studying for the test, we would create our own portfolios. Now, these portfolios had to include what we had learned, what questions we still had. Our teachers asked us to reflect on both the finished products and the learning process. We would then need to end with our goals for the upcoming semester. Now, based on that basic set of criteria, we would then create our portfolios. And we had the freedom to design these portfolios in a way that could, you know, reflect your basic creative voice. Ms. Waller, senior government teacher, gave us a lot of flexibility on how we did this. Now, I created a highly visual portfolio book in a style that fell somewhere between journal, scrapbook, and choose your own adventure book. It was weird and quirky and everything I was as a senior in high school, and to a large extent, who I still am right now at 40. I drew cartoons on the side and included sketch notes of core concepts I had learned. I chose a chronological approach. A friend of mine created a website on GeoCities, which was something back in the day that we used to be really into. And it was everything you would imagine, with flashing GIFs. Yes, I call them GIFs and not GIFs because it's graphical, not giraffical. And low-resolution scanned photos of his work, and yet we were, like, super impressed at what he'd created. Now, my twin brother, Jim, was the only one who chose to go the audio route. He recorded an NPR-style spoof called Stale Air, which is a play on fresh air, where he did his best to create that breathy NPR, toned-down NPR voice that sounds, well, a little bit like this. And he even made up NPR-sounding names for, you know, different people. He created different accents. He had them do late-breaking news that interrupted his show. He even did fake interviews in this David Biancooley-inspired review of his work. He spent hours on this project, splicing together the audio and creating various accents for those different news reports and everything else, and finding some music that he could play in the background, all that kind of stuff. Now I get it. Things have changed since then. Students can craft digital portfolios with embedded multimedia rather than relying on flashing GIFs. They can craft portfolio podcast without having to splice together audio on dual tape decks, which is what my brother had done. It is easier than ever for students to create authentic portfolios where they share their work and they reflect on their learning. So that's what I want to talk about. The reason why we would have student portfolio projects. When we think of assessment, it's easy to imagine a test or a rubric attached to a letter grade and a point value. But in many industries, from art to engineering to marketing, people demonstrate their proficiency with portfolios. And these portfolios demonstrate the creative craftsmanship and unique skills that people have attained. But these portfolios do more than that. They can tell a story of a person's journey in learning a particular craft. While transcripts and resumes provide a list of accomplishments, a portfolio includes a direct, tangible evidence that people can explore when choosing a team or hiring a new employee. Similarly, students can craft portfolios to showcase their work, reflect on their learning, and set goals for the future. And in doing so, they have the opportunity to own the assessment process. To put it more bluntly, portfolios are one of the best ways to have students own the assessment process. The portfolio process helps students reflect on their learning and set goals for the future, helps them plan their next steps. This can help improve their metacognition. Now, we know that metacognition is vital for learning. In fact, there have been studies showing that students with low metacognition tend to do poorly in college. There's a correlation between those who drop out early in college and those with lower metacognitive scores. That does not mean causation, right? We know that correlation doesn't mean causation, but we know that there is a strong correlation there. A relationship exists. Now, what do we mean by metacognition? Well, it's what happens when students analyze tasks, set goals, implement strategies, reflect on their learning, and it happens in an ongoing cycle. If you're interested, I have a sketch video about this, and it comes from the core ideas of the book How Learning Works, which is one of my favorite education books. But the idea then is that we want students to improve their metacognition. And portfolios can do that because it facilitates that process of reflection and goal setting. Students can also gain confidence as they share their work with the larger world. A portfolio can be the opportunity to say, this is my creative voice and I am not afraid to be known. In some cases, students might share their portfolio with their teacher and their family. Other times they might share their portfolio with the larger classroom community. And in a virtual or hybrid course, you might even ask students to present in small groups or run a larger virtual community celebration. But the idea is that they're getting a chance to gain confidence by sharing with an audience. Again, this guides reflection, it improves metacognition, and ultimately it helps them gain creative confidence. So I want to talk about some ways that we can do portfolios well. Here are 5 ways to get the most out of student portfolios. Number 1, let students choose the platform. Some students might prefer a blog because of the ability to create multiple tags and organize things topically and chronologically. A blog has the added advantage of allowing for comments, right? Which can be really helpful. However, others might prefer something a little more static, like a website, and they like this for the clarity and simplicity that it offers. Still, others might create a blog post and put their reflections inside that, and then use particular categories as sort of a function of a website, right? In some cases, they might do this blend of website and blog together. And in this case, the portfolio is more of an ongoing record rather than a summative assessment, right? It allows things to be, more chronological. Another variation of this might be a video series where students walk the viewer through their work with voiceovers, screencasts, and talking head style videos. And still, others might take snapshots of their work and do an annotated slideshow, and that's fine too. Although these are all the different digital options, and of course you could also add podcasts to that list, I didn't mention that. These are all the digital options, but students might create physical portfolios or scrapbooks and then create a digital version of that physical artifact. In some cases, students might present these in small group meetings and synchronous, you know, breakout sessions and things like that. Often students, though, they're going to blend together elements of the different platforms. So the student might do a portfolio blog with audio and video reflections embedded inside of it. The key thing here, though, is that students are deciding which platforms work best for them and why. Now, I want to make a quick disclaimer here. I'm not talking about learning styles. Research has demonstrated that there's no such thing as like a visual learner or auditory learner or kinesthetic learner. This is more about empowering students to self-select their platform based on their own approach and style that fits their, you know, personal preferences. Number two, encourage students to own the organizational structure. Students might organize things topically or chronologically, or they might create a chronological portfolio that they break down into different categories, including best work, growth, and next steps. And as a teacher, you might want to explain the different organizational structures. And it can help to find exemplars from outside the K-12 domain and encourage students to assess the pros and cons of different organizational structures and styles, and then come up with their own organizational structure based upon the exemplars that they see. Now, that works really well for advanced students, for students at the secondary level. I would say early elementary in particular, but elementary in general, you might be better off giving them the structure ahead of time. Number three, have students reflect on both the learning process and the final products. While we tend to think of portfolios as a chance to demonstrate one's best work, it's also an opportunity to tell a story. And here's what I mean. Students can share their best work, they can explain their work, but they can also walk people through the learning process. And I think that's really important. They can share examples of growth and improvement. They might reflect on the strategies they've used, the problems they've solved, and the challenges that they've faced along the way. And as the teacher, you might provide students with sample questions that they can use to guide this reflection process. All right, number four, choose a variety of work. Students might include their best work, their favorite work, and the work that demonstrated the most growth. That's one way that you could do it. Another option might be for students to select key works from different weeks in the semester and use that as a way to explain their mastery and reflect on their growth. So it's really up to you how many items that they choose, and you know what kind of variation you want to create in terms of the types of items. And then number five, don't wait until the end of the school year to start the portfolio process. Integrate the portfolio project into your unit plans. Carve out time on certain days to have students self-select, you know, their work and what works best for them, and write their reflections. This might seem challenging in a virtual environment, but it's the kind of activity that students can do asynchronously. And honestly, you could do this as a replacement for homework. Later, they might explain the items that they've selected when they meet in their small group for chats, in the breakout rooms, things like that. So it's really up to you in terms of how you structure this. The goal, though, should be to use the portfolio as a part of the formative self-assessment process rather than just waiting to do portfolios at the end of the school year or the end of the semester. Portfolios should not feel like a chore or a hoop that students have to jump through. Instead, it should be a celebration of student learning and a chance to reflect on their learning. The more they can own this process, the more likely they will be to engage in deeper reflection and put in that mental energy and effort at analyzing their work and planning their next steps. And teachers can facilitate this by creating digital portfolio projects. Now, I'm not going to get into this in the podcast, but if you look at the blog post that goes with it, I have a whole digital portfolio project with part one, part two, which is, you know, home. Number two is growth. Part three is the best work. Part four is what I learned. Part five is next steps. And there are guiding reflection questions that I included for each of those parts. The bottom line is this. When portfolios are an everyday part of the learning process, students can showcase their work, reflect on their growth, and set goals for the future. Here, students improve their metacognition as they determine where they are in their mastery and what steps they need to take in the future. And ultimately, this leads to deeper thinking and better learning. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever it is that you get your podcast? Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.